Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back, my friends, to where the music never ends. We're so glad for all your minds that we find, that we find. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Late Night Poets Rhythm and Rhyme Show. We are part of the world's largest community. That's allpoetry.com, and there you shall find us, the Late Night Poets. We put these radio shows on 7 nights a week, Monday through Sunday, 10 p.m. to midnight. Come hang with our wild dove, Luyu, and Gray Eyes in Nature and Passion on Mondays. Dig into the thoughts of Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. Turn up the heat with the Art of Seduction on Wednesday. Thursdays are split between In Our Craft or Selling Art with Richard and the Neutron, and Double Helix with a Phase and Index. Friday, come fill my eyes with open poetry. And every other Saturday, join Gray Eyes as he's howling at the moon in the Canadian wild, as he brings you bad company. And if you're looking for a little more edgy around, then please check out our After Midnight shows, 2:30 a.m., Monday through Saturday mornings. Join the V-Twins later on tonight after this show as they bring you the hearts of L&T, that'd be Victoria and Versus. Tuesday, take a walk on the wild side. Wednesday, join Neutron and the Captain, they said, are the After Midnight Bombers. Thursdays are split between delving into the world of strange magic with incoherent dust and Black Lace Diaries with Victoria Frost and Mr. M. Fridays split between crawling into the darkness with Pam and Break On Through. And Saturday, join Aphasiana and Babbler as they teach you the fine art of part sinner, part saint. Check out the contests and prompts for all of our shows. Call in to read your poems and hang for the fun. How you doing this evening, Pam?
Well, you know, I'm doing groovy, Daddy-O. Super fly and all that jive. How are you doing?
I think you got to go back about 50 years and bone up on your isms.
Probably. I'm waiting for somebody to make a time machine out of a from Back to the Future, the car, the DeLorean. I'm waiting for someone to make a time machine out of a expensive sports car, and then I'm going to travel back in time and learn how to talk like the true love child. And
Daddy-O is late 50s, early 60s.
I get all my past lives blurred together. I can't remember which ones, but how are you doing?
I'm all right.
Awesome sauce. And that's a Pam Ray-ism. So, and now awesome music you picked out for tonight. I tell you, you cannot listen to Sly and the Family Stone without shaking it up because, you know, it's cool.
It's a little different. Something unusual that came out of the mid-60s from the San Francisco scene.
Yep. Yep. They really did have a cool vibe. So,
and they were touted as one of the best acts on stage at Woodstock back in August of 69.
Oh, wow. That doesn't surprise me. They seem to have really good stage presence. And they were started by siblings, right? The band itself was started by siblings?
Actually, there's two on that. They were singing at an early age. They belonged to the Church of God in Christ, started singing there. Then they moved on to do other things. Sly was a little older, so he had already gotten in, did a couple of singles, and he was doing some recording, studio work, learning recording and all that. And he formed a band, I think it was called Sly and the Stoners. And his brother, Freddie, formed a band too, somewhere down around 66. Someone suggested they merge the two bands together. And since both Sly and Freddie played guitar, I gave up the lead guitar role for Freddie, and he took on and learned the organ at that time. And then his sister eventually took that on but she joined a couple of years later because she had a steady job at the time and she wasn't sure what was going on. And by the time she joined, I think 67, early 68, the band had a little bit of a following. And so she finally came on board and she took over the organ work and singing too. And they had a drummer, saxophonist, trumpet, so, and a bass player. So they did all right for themselves for a while. And somewhere around 69, nice. Things started getting a little unswirled as some of the band, especially Sly, was getting pretty well hooked into coke and PCP. He used to carry around a violin case with all his drugs in it. And they kind of laid off for about 18 months of not making music. And then around 71, they finally put out another album. But it was never the same.
Yeah.
The band eventually broke up, going their own ways. And Sly continued the Sly and the Family Stone with different renditions of musicians rolling through. And at kind of about 83, he kind of went downhill with his addictions.
That's a shame. It's not an uncommon story, though, unfortunately, in the world of music and fame. You know, but they certainly, you know, they left their mark in the music industry, and to this day, they're still fun to listen to. But like you said, it's unfortunate but common story. Well, that's really cool. I always liked being able to learn. You know, like I always knew I liked their music, but it's always nice, fun to and interesting to learn those little extra tidbits of information. Oh, and just to let you know, I have brought Tom on. So welcome, Tom. Glad you could join us.
My privilege.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Yeah, I grew up talking all that beatnik language and then the hippie language. I always thought I just sounded like everybody else. You know, whatever the vernacular.
I think that's true for... Yep, you know, and that's so true, though, for every time period. Like, you know, in the 80s, we had our slang terms, and I probably thought I just sounded super cool, but if anybody had made recordings of me when I was, like, 13, it probably would have been just horrible. But
You died later.
Right? Exactly. But what... I think this is definitely going to be a fun night.
Oh, I hope.
Absolutely.
Like good people.
You just don't see what comes forth.
Absolutely. All right. What's that, Tom?
I just said, what color is the alphabet will be?
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So what do you think?
Why not? Let's get kicking.
All right. And we are actually going to start out with carryovers from the last show, which was, okay, I'm...
Be a little CCR.
That's right. CCR. That was it. Sorry about that. Yes. And so our first poem up is Place a Candle in the Window by Inner Sanctum. And it goes like this. Place a candle in the window, because I'm coming home tonight. I will know if you still want me, if I see its glowing light. It will reignite the fire and will give us a fresh start. Place a candle in the window, if my love still warms your heart. Place a candle in the window, if your love for me is still true. For if I can see it burning, I will come right home to you. And if I don't see a candle, I'll keep driving through the rain. And my teardrops will remind me that I can't go home again. End poem.
Nicely read there, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Tom, tell us, what did you think?
Got a nice feel to it. You know, she handles the the candle in the window really nicely with the way she develops the phrase. And I'm going to have to stop there for a second because I'm losing my voice. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Oh, yeah. It's the joy of all the meds you're on. No. I like how she uses the play between the fire and the window and the love she's feeling, and how she then changes it into the rain at the end if she doesn't find it burning. It's a nice little piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Tom.
Oh, glad to help.
How about you, Pam?
Well, as always, she has just wonderful rhyme and flow. And I like how this is just kind of offering up a gentle expectation. Like, you know, she's going to be driving by, and all she's looking for is that sign. And I like how it works on a level of kind of like a miniature story, but it also works on a metaphorical level, and the whole idea of just show me some light, you know, hope that you feel the same way about me that I do about you. And I like that she puts the rain in at the end because it really creates the whole kind of atmosphere. So just an excellent brevity all the way through and very well done.
Nice to say. It reminds me of, there was something else around about that time, tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. You remember that?
That wasn't
that
from
same,
like the 50s?
No.
Oh, okay.
it's got that same type of feel to it, but this holds a little warmer a glow to it because you hit on that thought with the candle in the window there. That kind of is that notation that there's still something, some type of fire that still is lit, even if it's just the spark of the candle itself. And the thought of not seeing that candle in that last stanza hits on that note. Hey, I'll just keep on going my merry way, knowing that I won't ever walk this way again. And it offers up that kind of a note to whether it's lit or not. If it's lit, I'll be there as soon as I see it. But if it's not, then I know then there's nothing left for us to be lit once more, and I'll just leave you be at that point. Nicely done. All right, Pam, what we got next?
All right. Up next we have You Ever Seen the Rain by Kenny W. And Tom, will you give that a read for us, please?
Have You Ever Seen the Rain? By Kenny W. The rainmaker, he cast his spells, and the rain fell down upon us. He claimed all the credit, showed his vehemence. Do you give it credence? The deluge poured nonstop, and the witch doctor did not know to stop it. He claimed all the credit, said it was Autrey, standing in clear water. Both these great men could be right or wrong, claiming credit may be due, but ensuring our survival and the planet Earth's revival. End poem.
Great read, Tom. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you got first on this one.
Oh, awesome. I really enjoyed Kenny's work, and I like that he took a different approach in bringing up a witch doctor. The deluge poured nonstop, the witch doctor did not stop it. He claimed all credit, so it was not no auteur standing in clear water. Also, the fact that he put Creedence Clearwater Revival in there, I thought was really cool also. I thought there's like another way he made this different is, you know, a lot of people I feel like took a romantic approach to that song or a heartbreak approach, which there's no, you know, absolutely nothing wrong with that. They both definitely work really well. But I like that he went different in where he says both ensuring our survival and planet Earth's revival and giving the whole idea of the storyline with two men responsible for the Earth's revival, and then making us think, you know, what is, who or what, meaning ourselves, is truly responsible for that. So really just a wonderful thought-provoking bite with a nice little, I don't know, I think it's got a nice little touch of humor. It's not necessarily humor, it makes you smile. So excellent bite.
Nicely said, Anne. Thank you very much. And Tom, you got to read it, so what do you think?
Well, it's clever, and I thought he handled it well, because, you know, it was all things set up for the Creedence Clearwater Revival at the end of each verse, but I thought he did a really nice take on giving it a different way of being seen, and I rather enjoyed that as I was reading through.
Excellent, and I walk the same thought as you there, Tom. Using a Creedence Clearwater Revival to end those stanzas was a nice touch. But I also like the thought of the medicine man in the first one and the witch doctor in the other one. It kind of hits on that note of indigenous peoples and how they revere the land, and that was his driving note with this and what their belief system was in conjuring up stay the rain for their parched lands, and how it needs to be maintained on that level, whether you roll in with their belief system or not. It's irrelevant. Their thought is to land itself. Nicely done there, Kenny. Thank you. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
So does anyone else have the urge to start singing I Told the Witch Doctor?
Okay.
No?
I'll take that as a no.
I'm not sure. I can sing all the words, but I won't do that to you. I know it by heart.
Oh, man. Well, geez, you're going to have to, if you know it by heart, you're going to have to write a parody of it, and we'll have Rex sing it.
We'll do the, put the lime in the coconut and call me in the morning.
I told the witch doctor, I told what to do. You know, I that whole. That ooh ee ooh ah ah ding dang all on a bing bang. That's before your guys' time.
The doctor.
Now, see, that's Harry Nelson. That's 20 years later.
Those are all some cool songs, man.
That's the one that's buzzing in my mind at the moment. I can't get rid of it now. Thank you very much, Pam.
Earworm.
Yep, I just planted an earworm. All right.
And then there's the other one, Dr. Feelgood. So you got that
one. Oh, my
well.
God. You could have an entire music show and call it Playing Doctor.
Well, you could do, you know, you get a little Robert Palmer in there.
Oh, God. Yeah, there's plenty of them.
Yeah. Yep, that's for
not
sure.
That's a bad idea. That might prove to be a funny show.
That would be.
Great deal. It's just like I did an entire mix once for my sister. She never forgave me for it, because every song on it, and it was 90 minutes worth, was nothing but a song about rain by Bob Dylan, Creedence Clearwater, Sonny and Cher, Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, cool.
Just an incredible number of different people who've done songs about rain.
Yeah, those are definitely some awesome bands and singers. All right. And I have somebody to bring on, so here we go. Before we continue on, hello, area code 520. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
This is Kathy. Glad to have this.
Hi, Kathy. Glad you could join us.
Hey, Kathy.
Hey. Hi, everybody. Hi.
Hello.
And up next, we have, and how are you doing, Kathy?
Oh, I'm doing very well, thanks.
good.
I have to leave in about a half hour, but I thought I'd just stick my
okay,
stick
sounds
my
good.
Nose in the door for a little bit.
Cool. All right. All right. Well, up next we have Love is Best Shared in the Dark by Poetic Creations. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Love is Best Shared in the Dark by Poetic Creations. When the sun sank over the horizon and calm came to these shores, I nudged my fears and doubts to the side like a thong pulled out of the way. The rains did come, but I did not see touching maybes of yesterday, possibilities of reunion of torn flesh tickling in the roof of my mouth. Blind to see the beauty that lay before, who has long been waiting also. Now it all just seems so up in my face, a blood smells so damn real. Words are the poison lacing black hives that have scrolled into hidden skin, if only a reminder to myself to remember that this indelible ink is part of her. It's a part of me that I now treasure, hidden distrust and jealousy of others. This tattoo is a reminder of her. End quote. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Well, I like this. I like how it kind of takes on that shadow. The first thought I had when I got to the end line was, well, probably shouldn't get a tattoo of somebody's name, but of course it doesn't actually say that it's a name. But I did like how he touched upon that idea. I like the imagery of the rain did come, but I did not see clutching maybes of yesterday, possibilities of reunion of torn flesh tickling in the roof of my mouth, blind to see the beauty that lay before, who had long been waiting also. I like the whole idea of not seeing what's in front of you and the pain of looking back. So this is a really emotive, dark write. And, I like that it touches on those reminders that both haunt us and give us pain emotionally, but also give us those memories of the good time once had. And so excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Tom, how about you?
I was reading it, and it seems to have, to me, it feels like it has a really dark side, because from the reunion of torn flesh, the smell of her blood is surreal, and words are poison. It's only a reminder to myself to remember this indelible ink is part of her. It's a part that I now treasure, hidden and locked away from the distrust and jealousies of others. It's like he has a tattoo of her that was on her skin. So he has the piece of skin. Maybe I'm reading this all wrong. It's fascinating how these images he played with to mean different things and work in different ways. Really nicely done in that sense.
Excellent. Thank you, Tom. And Kathy, how about you?
Oh, wow. This is very, very deep. When you get a tattoo, you are taking on part of that person. And I think that's kind of what he's saying, hit on part of her, and it won't rub off. Words are the prison lacing black, you know. I'm having trouble reading this because I don't have my readers. Just a minute. Oh, never mind. I'll get them later. But this is a very emotive poem. I was listening to it, and it really does flow very well. So I'm getting my readers now, folks. Sorry.
Thank you,
but
Kathy.
But I like Paul very much. Thank you.
I think the voice in this, I've already hit that note of a bit dark, but there is some joy in this too, because there's some heavy sensuality in those first couple of stanzas, like a thong pulled out of the way, tickling in the roof of my mouth, her blood smells so damn real. That hits on the note of intimacy, as well as the a reunion of torn flesh. That means broken, parted ways at that moment. The thought of the last two stanzas, words are the poison lacing black tide that's scrolled in the hidden skin. That could be literal, but it could also be metaphorical. The poison of words spat between the two could now be the thought that etched upon the heart, so to speak. And then that angle in the last stanza hits on the note of, though it's hidden and locked away, and it's something it treasures now because it's a reminder of that which she probably helped destroy because of the distrust and jealousy, or maybe that was just part of their group altogether. This tattoo is a reminder of her. That's just the maybe the hidden thought of the a metaphorical tattoo that is now laced around his heart. Anyway, I like that. Thank you very much there, TC. All right. The next
Pam went away for a bit. Says the next one's up by Naomi Sarah.
And Kathy, could you read this one for us, please? No Sun on a Rainy Day by Naomi Sarah.
Okay, let me go to Love is Best Shared on a Rainy Day by Naomi Sarah.
No.
It passed past the trail, a bad moon's horizon, and the dog can't catch its tail. He shivers and sweats, caught somewhere where you'd never see the sun, beaming down, just all rainy days. The prince became the frog, left her choking and swearing, earthquakes and lightning, and about to lose her mind, caught halfway between a hiccup and a yawn. Yep, it's half past the trail, trouble's on its way, and she hangs onto the rail, but it's a slipping from her grasp. Glistening bright under his shining headlights, backing away into the rainy night. Whoa, don't look back to see. There's a rumbling calling out his name. 200 million guns are loaded inside her icy eyes and crying out, take aim. And he's left choking, caught halfway somewhere between a hiccup and a yawn. Yep, it passed past the trail and the dog chases his tail. Woof, woof. Bang, bang, to the last. Now he's headed down the trail as the tree of legs hides his tail. End poem.
Great read, Kathy. Thank you very much. And Pam, are you back so you can offer up the first thought?
Oh, well, you know, I always enjoy Naomi's poetry. And one of the things I particularly like about this one is how she creates a balance of pain and humor. I mean, oh my goodness, especially now that ending line, and between his legs he hides his tail. That was great. But you can definitely, I really like, yep, it's half past the trail, trouble runs away, and she hangs onto the rail, but it's slipping from her grasp, glistening bright under his shimmering headlights, backing on the way into the rainy night. The whole idea of just, you know, feeling like completely helpless, lost, abandoned, that the person has betrayed you. And he really captures that really well. And he's left choking, caught halfway somewhere between a hiccup and a yawn. That line right there make me think of someone who really just, you know, doesn't give a damn anymore. It's really a hard-hitting and emotive write with just the kind of right bite of humor within it. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Tom, how about you?
I already commented on this one. It said, sharp, sarcastic, with a twinkle in the eye, as you describe how the liar plays, even as he tries to play. It is sad that there are those who deeply want something to be true, that they allow themselves to be used by those who feel their success is more important than the damage done. So your mix of the fairy tale and dog's tale makes for a delicious piece of betrayal. I mean, you know, I like that she played in the Creedence Clearwater bits and pieces of various songs as well, right on top of everything else.
I like that. Thank you, Tom. And Kathy, you got to read it. What'd you think?
Oh, that's great. Very tongue-in-cheek, but very serious at the same time. I like, whoa, don't look back to see. There's a rumbling, calling out his name. 200 million guns are loaded inside her icy eyes, crying out, take aim. Very good. I like this CCR kind of feel to it, too. You know, and the end line is perfect. After woof, woof, bang, bang, alas, instead of alas, L-A-A-S, it's A-L-A-S-S. Very interesting and very well done. Now he's headed down the trail, and between his lights, he hides his tail. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Kathy. This stings hard because it offers up those nice notes, though. A bad moon's arising, and the dog can't catch its tail. It kind of hits on the note of, it's chasing too much of that tail, so to speak. He shivers and sweats, caught somewhere where you never see the sun beaming down, just all rainy days. I like the metaphorical role in this, especially that third one, the prince became the frog, that offers up that note of, what you thought you had is nothing but the dog offered up in that first stanza itself. And I did like that thought with the 200 million guns, Lord Boy. That does offer up a pointed note of, you better run now because I'm going to kill your ass if I get a hold of you. And then again, and the dog, he chases his tail, woof, woof, bang, bang, the last. Now he's headed down the trail. But it hits on that note of heaviness, of knowing that, he ain't coming back again. And between his legs, he hides his tail. That's because his nunchucks have been well used in the moment. And you're not on a return date, so to speak. It bites hard at betrayal all the way through. Nicely done, Naomi. Thank you. All right, Pam, what we got next?
All right. Our last carryover is Aces and Eights by Robert Richard. And Tom, will you give – wait, not Tom, sorry, because I got – oh, shoot, I forgot my plan. Yep. Let me think about this real quick. What was I going to do? Sorry. Tom, yes, go ahead.
Okay.
Read that, please.
Aces and Eights by Richard. Strange, primordial, this jungle green, but I'm not here to see or be seen. I am here to kill. Enemies perceive, and they the same reason me. Hunting and being hunted by humans is the most exhilarating, thrilling, extraordinary, and chilling enterprise there could be. At least, that's what I thought before I played this high-stakes game with others who did the same. Some now only a nameless face, hunting and haunting me still in those distant jungles green. Indeed, how I envy those faces, dealt eights and aces as I awaken to my own screams, running through yesterday's jungles in some distant foreign land, holding aces and eights, frozen smile on my face, gripping the dead man's hand. End poem.
I like that. Nicely done, Tom. Thank you very much. Kathy, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
Wow. Of course, one conjures up thoughts of Vietnam, Aces and Eights. It's, I awakened to my own screams, running through yesterday's jungle in some distant foreign land, holding aces and eights, frozen smile on my face, gripping the dead man's hand. Whoa. I didn't know aces and eights was the dead man's hand. So this is education for me. But it is a very well written poem. Indeed, hunting and being hunted by humans is the most exhilarating, thrilling, extraordinary, and chilling enterprise there could be. It
is
chilling to think about.
And Pam, how about you?
I really like this. It's a great take on his chosen prompt. And I do like where he brings the dead man's hand in, and it works real well on a metaphorical level. One of the things I particularly like about this write is how he starts out with the confident line, I am here to kill enemies perceived, and they for the same reason me hunting and being hunted by humans is the most thrilling, thrilling, extraordinary, and chilling enterprise there could be. At least that's what I thought before. I mean, the whole poem is great, but the idea that he opens this up to, and I can only imagine myself in that place, but what I see is a young man, overly confident, overly cocky, you know, ready to take on the world and convince the most amazing, awesome thing he's ever going to do is enter into the battle, only to find out it's a lot more brutal and ugly and emotionally difficult than he could have ever imagined. So by starting it out with that kind of almost like a confidence makes the second half of the poem even darker because you feel that hard slap of reality in the face. So just a powerful write all the way through and very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. Thank you. And Tom, you read that well. How about you?
Well, I just kept thinking, I think it was Wild Bill Hickok who got help on the dead man's hand of aces over eight and shot from behind. And that plays really well into this as the dead man's hand because you don't know when it's coming. You don't know where it will come from. You don't know what to expect. You just know that you are playing in a situation where everybody's a gunslinger in a sense, but some people have been dealt hands that give them no chance to ever come back. And then you have all the related PTSDs and the bad dreams and everything else that follow. He catches it all with sort of a I've been looking for the word since I've read it because
haunting.
My first feeling was he was treating it frivolously, and then as I ran back through it, it's not frivolous. It's more as if he has distanced himself from it. So while it's real, at the same time he doesn't want to let it get real enough to really touch it. If that makes any sense.
I got you, yeah. there's a heaviness to this. In those moments, everything is a fight or die, and that's the optimum feeling, the adrenaline pumping in you. It's years later when a lot of this stuff with PTSD sets in, where the boys come home and all of a sudden you find the wife finds the husband crawling the house. Charlie's under the wire and he's got a knife or a 45 in his hand. And that's where a lot of this hits on and notices, because that ace in eights, I thought, was a great metaphor, because like you said, Tom, that is the dead man's hand, while Bill Hickok, and he did take a bullet to the back of the head, because even though he was fully aware of his surroundings and always sat with his back against the wall, he wasn't aware that one night when everything came to a halting screech and he was holding that winning hand, so to speak, which everybody now terminates as that is the death hand. That is, you got that, you best beware of what's coming around the corner. And even though you know things are bad out there, you wake up to that because you can't get rid of those, what you've seen, what you've done. And
right.
It's something that lingers long after the war is gone.
Yeah.
Great comments, everybody. All right, Pam, what you got next?
All right, up next we have I Am a Poet by Mamyaw, and we do have a recording for that one, so here we go.
I am a poet. I take my pen in hand, and I begin to write of the chaos in my mind, of tranquility and madness. I take my guitar and pluck the chords with each bleeding finger, but still no song. I fight my demons on white paper sheets. They gnash and claw back until I succumb to their beatings. Then I curl up and sob, wailing in the dark, till I go quiet, eyes shut, chest heaving, staggering breaths. It won't be long until daylight fades and shadows come to comfort me again. When morning comes, I write again. I pluck again. I'm a poet again.
Great read, Mamyaw. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It's greatly appreciated. And Tom, why don't we start with you to lead off?
It's a very interesting piece about writing poetry, because it's saying that the art is there internally that pushes you to lay out everything on paper, in the chords of music, really picking up on the lyricism that's naturally in poetry, and then having really dwelled that deeply into oneself, having to, in a sense, pay the price. Then I curl up and sob, waiting in the dark, till I go quiet, eyes shut, chest heaving, staggering breath. Because there comes a time when it all becomes too much. And yet, just because a new day is here, one writes some more. Because what else is there?
Well said, Tom. Thank you. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this. I like how she says, and I begin to write of the chaos in my mind and tranquility and madness. And then she doesn't just stick to the idea of writing the poetry, but I take my guitar and pluck the chords with each bleeding finger, but still no song. You know, it's playing music, anything artistic. Sometimes it seems like all you're doing is just plucking away and bleeding your soul out, but nothing is coming. And I fight my demons on white paper sheets. They gnash and claw back until I succumb to their beating. Just, I mean, that is an especially dark part,
but it reminds us of how oftentimes poetry is very cathartic in writing it, and then sometimes those who write it are pouring out their souls, they're battling their demons, and I like this all the way through, but I find that there's a kind of almost a positive note. When morning comes, I write again, I pluck again, I'm a poet again. It's that whole idea of making it through that nighttime depression, that nighttime sorrow or the loneliness of the night, and then having a new, fresh day filled with that morning, that hope, that potential, and knowing that you get to try again. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you very much there, Pam. And Kathy, how about you?
Oh, I like this very much, and I can relate to it. Being a night owl, it really strikes home to me because I write mostly at night. You know, it is my daylight, really. And I write late at night, I mean early in the morning, and usually I'm done writing when the daylight comes, and then daylight fades and shadows come to comfort me again. When morning comes, I write again, pluck again, I am a poet again. And there is such a musical quality to poetry. And it really interconnecting to me because I'm a songwriter. So I really like this, Daniel. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Kathy. That first stanza, chaos in my mind, tranquility and madness, that has a nice note to the thought of how the mind works when one is taking up that pen in the moment or picking up that guitar in the next stanza, trying to work out that note, that rhythm that gives me the thought of where I'm going to go next, but still no song. It kind of hits on that note of maybe pushing too hard in the moment because the mind is working, but nothing's connecting in that moment. I fight my demons on white paper sheets. They gnash and fall back until I succumb to their beatings. That hits me with the notion of criticality, how one actually critiques oneself so much that what you've actually done in the moment bears no semblance to any cohesive thought. And so you succumb in the moment and give up. And then the thought of the crying and then staggering breaths and daylight fading, until daylight fades and shadows come to comfort me again. And then there's a sort of a, all right, give it a break. And in the morning you wake up with fresh eyes and all of a sudden it begins to click. And that's where I got the last angle on this in that last stanza. All right, Pam, coming back your way.
I like that thought, Rex, especially when, as you said, you know, waking up with fresh eyes, because I think we've all have been there and had to do that, you know, when it comes to writing.
Well, yeah, because if you've jotted the notes down and you've got some scribbled pen or screwed up paper, you've still got the stuff. You didn't throw it away. You didn't delete it. It's just sitting around, and you look at it the next morning after you've had a cup of coffee or something, and all of a sudden you can look at it fresh and make an adjustment where you need be.
Absolutely. So true. All right. And up next we have Rocket Man by Peter Solway. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
All right. Rocket Man by Peter Solway. No ladder to climb. Satin or Stalin denounce. Angels reassure, entertain, just a lonely friend, waving down below zero. You was always destined, Rocket Man. Elton John's astronaut, sad but complete, Russian hound in outer space, medieval report before that. Script of colored ink, eternal, blue of Afghan hills, orbit of Genesis, light from blackout, tomorrow, our guessing competition. rise of a million more stars to name, putting this poet on the spot. Mars and Venus to reconcile, Jupiter to support. No more the ghost of death, roast and hearth, love on television, snakes and dreams, heaven of desserts. Tomorrow morn, fresh with juice, Eve squeeze, Adam with compass, and boom. All right, Pam, you got the first crack.
All right. Wow. Well, I tell you, as always, Peter is creative with his wordplay. I really like the Elton John's Astronaut Sad But Compete, Russian Hound and Outer Space Medieval Report before that. It makes me think of not only the history of the race, you know, a war, the race to the moon or to space, but also how, you know, nowadays every famous person, every Tom, Dick, Harry, and Jane are trying to get themselves up in space for that 15 minutes of fame. Let's see, what else? Mars and Venus to reconcile, Jupiter to support. You know, I always feel like he's kind of got this kind of edgy, biting humor about life in general. No more the ghost of death, roast and hearth, love on television, snakes and dreams, heaven of desserts. I feel like there's this kind of idea that life continues on, or there's something past death, but he's reminding us that it might not be exactly what we've been programmed to think it is. It's definitely a very thought-provoking ride. I'm sure I could read it three or four different times and come up with three or four different thoughts, but those are my thoughts for this round.
Thank you, Pam. How about you, Tom?
I found myself reading this because I've been going back through it, and the sense that somehow we see being able to go to space as being a resolution and an answer to problems that are all down below. Angels reassure, entertain, just the lonely Fred waving down below zero with all his destined rocket man. That sense of that looking down and just sort of like, up here I have all the answers. And yet, the script of colored ink, eternal, the blue of Afghan hills, orbit of Genesis, light, blackout, tomorrow, our guessing competition. That whole sense that we really don't know what tomorrow brings. And so much of our history creates our future. And there's so much more to explore, you know, prize and a million more stars to name. It's almost, as by the time we get to the last two verses, where all of a sudden he's looking at the moment and where we are, roasting hearts, love on television, snakes and dreams, heaven of desserts. As if no more quizzes, no more ghosts of death, as if, you know, happy ever after is all right here and we're all going to be wonderful and ruby. And somehow that means that, you know, tomorrow morning we're going to wake up and somebody's going to have squeezed fresh juice and everything's going to be happy and somebody's going to know the wise way to go. There's a lot of, it's almost like, you know, our believing in the rocket man is just another way of fooling ourselves that everything in the future is going to take care of itself without us having to do anything.
Oh, nice there, Tom. I like that. Thank you very much. And Kathy, how about you?
Well, I have to go now, I'm afraid. As I said, I could only come in for a short time, but I wanted to know if there is going to be a carryover next week for Sly and the Family Stone, because I did write a poem for that.
Well, if you wrote, why don't we get your poem up? And I didn't see it in the contest. I went and looked. But if you wrote for the prompt, why don't we get your poem up and you can read it?
Okay. Well, all right. I want to say this is a wonderful, very, and I like Tom's take on it very much. That script of colored ink eternal, blue of Afghan hills, orbit of Genesis, light from blackout tomorrow, a guessing competition. Absolutely right. That's right on, Tom, I think. And but I could read this, you know, 10 times and come up with something different every time. That's what I like about Peter Solway. He got some very definite depth to his work. So,
well,
anyway,
thank you, Jackie, and great comments, everybody. That no ladder to climb kind of hits on that note of maybe we've climbed too high, and the thought is we're not taking care of, like, as Tom pointed out, that which is below us as opposed to that which is above. The thought of orbit of Genesis, that kind of hits on that note of beginnings. And then light from blackout tomorrow, our guessing competition, it kind of has that note of what happens when the lights go out. What happens next? And then the thought of Mars and Venus to reconcile kind of hits on that note of man and woman once again returning to a more better confluence of thought and support. And then again, you hit on Jupiter to support. Jupiter at one point was the Romans god of all gods. So there is that thought, maybe as a metaphor there to do we go back to some kind of religious morality? Then that second last stanza, no more ghosts of death, roasting hearth, love on television, snakes and dreams, heaven of desserts. There's that notation of things quieting without all of that need and wants right there. And then the thought, tomorrow morn, fresh with juice, Eve squeezed, Adam with compass. That kind of a notation to things working its way back out of Genesis into the new world as the couple itself. Nicely done, Peter. Thank you. All right, Pam.
All right. Catherine, I've got your poem up. You can go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. Just a second here. I didn't know you had my poem up. Sorry, you guys. I'm always such a joy to work with here. Not. Okay. This is called Everyday Steeple. Who is right? Who is wrong? Please listen to me while I sing this song. There's no shame in the kingdom of heaven. It's 24/7, 11. Ah, it's Everyday Steeple. Here is the Catholic who won't listen to you. The Baptist won't accept the Messianic Jew. There's a thought that we won't see. It don't matter, because God is free. Ah, it's Everyday Steeple. There's a Pentecostal who won't accept the Calvinist, who won't accept the Methodist, who won't accept the denominational. Different strokes for different folks. We have one God, and that's their joke. Ah, we're everyday people.
Great read, Catherine. Thank you very much. And Pam, kick us off, please.
All right. Well, first of all, great read, Catherine. I really like the title, Everyday Steeple, and the whole idea that, you know, a place of worship shouldn't be treated like, you know, somewhere where you only go on special occasions. And I like that you put the ah in there because I felt like that kind of added to the whole, like, musical, lyrical vibe of it. I like different strokes for different folks. I think that was just, it was a good write about that everyday faith and that how, you know, everybody, you know, lives and expresses it in different ways. So just absolutely very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And Tom, how about you?
This is a great parody. To take everyday people, turn it into everyday people, and then play off everything off the various different religions and the way that they promise the kingdom of God, you know, everybody's supposed to love each other, and then we practice all these different forms of hating each other. When she came to the second time, she goes, it's an everyday steeple. The humor was starting to get really sharp and really a dynamite. Because this is the kind of thing where I really think Sly himself would have appreciated this and thought the humor was perfect. Very, very well done.
Thank you.
Nicely said, Tom. All right, Kathy. I like that humor, the last line in that first stanza. It's 24, not 7 to 11. Because 7-Eleven, that used to be what the store was called, because those were the hours it was open until it turned around into being a 24-hour store. So that touched your humor there. I appreciate it. Everything else kind of hits on that note of the backlash of breaking off from one because you think it's too strict or whatever. It doesn't fall into your theories of what the book is supposed to be about. And that deviates from the theme and the message from the book itself, which is the obvious message in here that, hey, we all believe in that one God, so what is the ease in giving the next person their daily due as opposed to your perfunctory thought as opposed to theirs? There isn't any difference, except you allow this, they don't allow that. So what? Big deal. Let everybody be who and what they are under that thought to God and his word. And that's basically why we're all everyday people to begin with, or we should be. If one class gives the rights to the other class and admits to them, hey, you know, not a big deal, you know what? We'd be a whole lot happier in our existence instead of turning the thought to they've got to be gone because they're unruly, they're savage, they're whatever.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Amen. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Pam, it's back to you.
All right. And up next we have your poem, Tom. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. I write these, and I've got the music in the back of my head, and I hear the horns and the guitar break, and even sometimes the guitar solos. But I'm not a musician. I have no singing voice anymore. And it's really frustrating because I have no way of sharing that with you. But anyway, walk the talk. You need the night to let you deal with the day. It takes more than dreams to let you feel okay. Struggle with the numbers, got to know the math. If you want to be a real man, you got to talk more than trash. Everybody's talking like they're the big man. Very few people can do the things they plan. Everybody's ready. Very few start. Everybody wants something. Got to have the heart. End poem.
Wonderful.
Great read, Tom. Thank you very much. And Kathy, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. I wanted to read.
Why don't you kick us off with a comment?
Okay. Oh, man. This is right on, Tom. Walk the talk. That's right. You need the night to let you deal with the day. It takes more than dreams to let you feel okay. Struggle with the numbers. Got to know the man. If you want to be a real man, you got to talk more than trash. Everybody's talking like they're the big man. Very few people can do the things they plan. Right on. A lot of people will say they're say their piece, but they won't take the pieces of the puzzle and put them together. You know, this is very well written. It's brevity that is for these times, because, you know, we want to see the fruit, okay? We don't want the seed. Anybody can plant seed, but whether they tend it to fruition is another thing. So you got to have heart, and this has heart, Todd. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nicely said, Kathy. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, my goodness. I feel like somebody took one of Tom's poems and cut it in half. Tom, I'm so used to your longer writes. But well, you definitely can. You're multi-talented. This is a hard-hitting. It's a smart brevity. I like how it has that bite to it that you, you know, that you, first of all, what a wonderful line to open up with. You need the night to let you deal with the day. You need both the positive and negative, the good days and the bad days, the dark and the light. And I also really like that you remind men everywhere, if you want to be a real man, you got to talk more than trash. You know, of course, that applies to women too, people in general. You know, you can't just talk the trash. You have to move forward. You have to take action. And you say that in the ending stanza, everybody's ready, very few start. Everybody wants something. Got to have the heart. You know, you can talk till you're blue in the face, but until you start taking those first steps forward, you know, you can have a dream journal, whatever, but until you put that into action, it's nothing. It's just simply a dream. So absolutely an excellent write and very well done.
Indeed.
Nicely said, Dan. Thank you. Tom, I get out of this. It's easy being a Monday morning quarterback when you've got no real skin in the game. That means getting up and doing something about what you're thrashing about. Even if you fail on it, you get your ass back up again and do it until you get to that point where what you want is what you get because you've earned it, not because it's being given to you. And that's the thought I got. And the thought of gotta have heart is if you don't have heart in what you're doing, then it means nothing at all. It's just a frivolous entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What was that, Tom?
It was just something back. It just goes back to putting money where your mouth is, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, no skin in the game.
And I really kind of wanted to play that off of his the jive talking feeling that he always puts in his work.
Well, you did that because you put a little zip in your step when you read that. Something you don't normally do. You got that roll come down. All right, Pam, where you want to go next?
All right.
Up next, lady.
Bye-bye, everybody. Good night, Kathy. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Good night, Kathy.
Good night, everybody. Good night,
Kathy. Good night, Kathy.
All right, up next we have Your Love Lifts Me Higher by Martha Gettle, and we do have a recording for that one. So let me find that, and here we go.
Your Love Lifts Me High by Martha Gettle. As the weeks turn into years, I face no fears and shed no tears. I'm so glad that you are by my side. Every time I look into your eyes, I thank the Lord above you're still here, and I pull you close and hold you near. And as I shed a happy tear or two, I'm so thankful I get to share my life with you. because your love lifts me high. I swear my heart has touched the sky. And when you reach out and take my hand, I have all I ever dreamed or planned. So come and kiss me sweet, and I will lay my love at your feet. 'Cause there in your face I see all the love I will ever need.
Great read and song there, Martha. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. Tom, why don't we start with you, please?
This speaks to a number of things, but most of all, the idea that there is a great deal of joy in being in a loving relationship, and that a loving relationship is made up of yourself, your partner, their looks, their love, your relationship to all of the things that God has gifted you with, but most of all, the way you have been gifted with this one person you love. And I think it's very, very sweet and very, very beautiful.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you very much, Tom. All right, Pam, how about you?
I really like the fact that this isn't about the high that you get from a new relationship, but rather about the high that you get from a long-term, steady, and as Tom mentioned, a loving relationship. I like that she opens up with, as the weeks turn into years, and I face no fears and shed no tears, I'm so glad you are by my side. And because your love lifts me high, I swear my heart to touch the sky, and when you reach out and take my hand, I have all that I ever dreamed or planned. I like how she sings about the comfort of having someone stand by your side and be together for over the years. So just a wonderful, heartfelt song and very well done.
Yes, it is. I got one word for happiness. There's a note to nothing but the happiness in here. You know, there's sad notes and some angry notes, but that's all put aside for the singularity that offers up those notes of happiness, and that's what binds her in within this piece itself. Well done there, Martha. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
Back on your end. All right. Great comment, Rex. And up next, I'm going to actually read my poem, which was inspired by different songs in the contest for the show. All right. And this is Your Funkadelic Psychedelic, and it goes like this. Your funkadelic psychedelic make me high as kingdom come, with a smooth kind of groove in the golden summer sun. I like the way you move. I like the way you shake it. That sugar that you're offering, I'm gladly going to take it. People sing your praises when you're walking down the street, because white boy's got the kind of strut that knows to keep the beat. You're burning hot like coffee, cool as iced black tea. Within your smooth hard lines, there's a tantric mystery. You rock with bell bottoms and solid gold medallions. You're funkadelic, psychedelic, and hanging like a stallion. The ladies all go crazy for that trophy in your pants, lined up for your honey like hungry bees and ants. I'm going to order up some fries with that groovy shake you got, make them extra salty, serve them extra hot. You're the music in my air, the tempo in my veins. I'll drive you like a GTO, cruising up and down your lanes. End poem.
Great read, Pam. All right, Tom, you get first lick of this one.
I'm not going to touch that. The center version there, you're burning hot like coffee, cool as iced black tea with your smooth hard lines. There's a tantric mystery. You could have said kundalini, I guess, but tantric has a much better beat to it. This is delightful. Just enough sarcasm in it that as you play through it, it becomes something where everything's pushed just a little too far, stretched just a little too much in some ways, that I just had you laughing. There's a heck of a lot of joy and delight in this at the same time that you're acting like a risky, frisky little stallion yourself, you know. Quite a lot of fun. I'm really glad you read it and beautifully written.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. There's only one way this thing can go, and there's, let me see. There's purple haze all through your brain, and lately things don't seem the same. Acting funny, but you don't know why. Excuse you while you kiss the sky. And that kind of rocks out what this says, because I'm not going to delve into these pieces, but Gene would sit there and go, oh, did you really do that? Yes, you did do that.
And I did like that.
I did like that, the ending there. I'll drive you like a GTO cruising up and down your lanes. Yeah, there's a tri-power thought in that one.
Yep.
Yeah, you give a home meeting to Mopar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Rick.
Lay down some rubber. Oh, yeah, maybe that was poor choice of words there. All right. yeah, I should have left that one alone. Oh, crap.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, where are we going next?
All right. And up next, we have I Want to Take You Higher by Lauren67. And, Rex, will you get that a read for us, please?
I Want to Take You Higher by Lauren67. Dope dealer, the evil that is nearer, the dope dealer. They come at all hours thinking they're going to get superpowers, looking for some weed your demon tells you it needs to feed. Right now, and it don't care how you fare, you're short on cash, sell your phone, your car, your girlfriend's ass, whatever you have. You need some pills? Don't pay the bills to get your pills so you can take a ride to heaven with a demon as your driver. You might get too high. It's bigger than you and I. Can't get a job. It's easier to rob. Whether you need a blunt or a front, Dr. Feelgood will change your attitude. How about some meth, or better yet, combine it with morphine and try to find, if it don't mind, a vein that is so inclined. Feed me your demon, says, and it don't care how you fare. Just come and see Dr. Feelgood immediately. I'm always here, don't have no fear, but if I'm gone, I won't be long. But if it's long, say 3 to 5, do not worry. My demons will scurry, and another Dr. Feelgood will be there in a hurry. End poem. All right, Pam, you got the first one on here.
I like the approach that he took with this. You know, I'm so used to his extremely kind of like always taking a oddball humorous approach all the way through. This is different for him. I like that he kind of took the idea of going higher in the direction of a drug dealer, a seller, somebody who gets people hooked. I like that he brought in Dr. Feelgood, a reference to that song by Motley Crue. I thought that was really cool. And what else? Let's see. You need more pills, don't pay the bills or get your pills so you can take a ride to heaven with a demon as your driver. I like throughout this whole write that he tells it from the perspective of the drug dealer, and that he reminds us that these are evil people who prey on people who, you know, have addictions and, you know, talks to, like the whole idea of what people will sacrifice for their addiction, family, friends, jobs, responsibilities, you know, so, you know, just an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Tom, how about you?
I'm going to have to pass on this one because I really like what Pam said. But this runs close enough to stuff I've worked with and worked on that I'll find myself on a soapbox in a heartbeat. We really don't need me to go there. Because the whole thing about addiction and dealers and everything like that has social, political, and psychological issues that I know so well, you do not want to get me started.
Oh, I understand that. Back in the day, this was an easy throw, the dope dealer on the corner. Now it kind of hits on the doctors who are the biggest dealers these days, dropping out pills like they were cotton candy. And
there's
I think maybe that's part of this as well. I mean,
but
the demonology is taking a nice step forward.
The thing that's biggest to me is the fact in places where they have legalized drugs and started working with people who are on drugs in a less adversarial fashion, find that most people who have addictions really manage them quite well and control their budgets and everything else like that when they don't feel they've got to hide from everybody the fact that they're, you know, addicted.
Oh, okay.
There's a real change in social behavior when you legalize it and don't treat the person who's hooked
as a curse upon society, so to speak.
Right. Big shift in behavior.
Huh. Actually, that's quite the thought to consider and mull over the possibility. Yeah. Well, it does make sense.
Yeah, we like to point our fingers and damn everybody to hell who we think has sinned. And sometimes that causes more problems than it solves.
Oh, absolutely. Great thoughts there, Tom. Thank you very much. And this also reminds me of The Pusher by Steppenwolf. That was another song back in the day, too. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
Yeah, The Pusher was another good song. And up next we have Standing Room Only, Everyday People by Sly and Family Stone by Diane D. And we have a recording for that one, so go ahead and find that. I think we have a recording. Yes, we did. There it is.
Standing Room Only by Diane D. Standing all day, we're 1 million strong. We are one voice, come sing our song. I looked once, I looked twice, I soon came to see. They want acceptance, the same as me. We are standing room only. We are a new voice who will not let the pain go and will not keep our mouths shut, shouting out the painful stuff. Anything goes if everyone shows. So keep on and stay strong and stand for what you believe in. We are one skin forever. We are no better, we're equal to you. We are one skin to our color, we're true. A white man, a black man, we are all the same. Yes, we always say that skin is skin. We are standing room only. This was a long night, we couldn't see the daylight. We're marching off to protest, we're all the same, there is no best. Anything goes if everyone shows. So keep on and stay strong and stand for what you believe in. We are one skin forever. There is a white man who won't accept the black man, that won't accept the red man, that won't accept the brown man. Anything goes if everyone shows. So keep on and stay strong and stand for what you believe in. We are standing room only.
Great read, Diane. Thank you very much to the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right. Tom, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, this I like the way she read it. It really came across as a good rap in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And it's very sharp in its both its parody of the song Everyday People, but at the same time saying something really, really good about the fact that we're all, you know, where she goes, we're all the same. No, there is no best. Anything goes if everyone shows. But keep on and stay strong and stand for what you believe in. I mean, great message, as well as just a great sense of how it all works in terms of the beat, the rhythm, and using free verse in a sharp and interesting way.
Excellent, Tom. I agree. It's funny what you said about the beat, because back when this got started, just soon afterwards, it was noted in the music scene, there were two kinds of music. There was the music that came, of the black music that came before Sly and the Family Stone, and then there was the black music that came after Sly and the Family Stone. They said
yeah.
What Stone brought forth was the generational thought of moving music in another direction. It kind of helped birth hip-hop, rap, and everything else in between. So, nicely said there, Tom. Thank you. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this. First of all, excellent choice of background music. This flowed really nicely. Even though it wasn't a rhyming poem, there was something about the meter that worked out really well. I like that she used the phrase standing room only, which usually applies to like going to an event or a restaurant or something where there's no more seating available. And I like that she changed that to reflect the idea that if they stand together and speak together, you know, they become a stronger voice, they become a unity. And I like how she reminds us that, you know, on the inside we're all the same. You know, we're standing room only. This was a long night. We couldn't see the daylight. We're marching off to protest with all the same. We're all the same. There is no best. Anything goes if everyone shows. So keep on and stay strong. This has a you know, it works really well with the Sly and the Family Stone music. I feel like it almost sings like an anthem. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Excellent. Now we're coming back to you.
What? Oh, I thought you had. Okay, yeah, that's right. You did
yeah,
come
you
and you made
one.
That. All right. Well, up next we have Flow by Durkin. And Tom, will you give that a read for us, please?
Okay, let me bring it up. Flow by Durkin. I want to go where the flow goes, know where the road flows, show all the pros that I know to the no shows. Shows that I don't know, those who have no hope, think they won't flow. Poetry is no joke. Flows will explode out your nose if you hope so. Don't be a no-show. Prose is a yo-yo. Flows going high, though, after getting so low, those who will pose. When I flow down the road, will know I explode. When I'm flowing, unloading the rhyme, the rhythm I'm growing, the rhyme I'm glowing. Goodbye.
That was a great read, Tom. A perfect read for this piece itself. Thank you. All right, Pam, you're up first.
All right. I really liked the way that, you know, that the rhyme, the flow, you know, the I really, like shows to the no shows, shows that I don't know. Those who have no hope think that they won't flow. Poetry is no joke. Flows will explode out your nose if you hope so. Don't be a no show. Prose is a yo yo. You know, there's some real clever phrasing in here. It has a tidbit of humor. You know, the whole idea of the
flow just coming out of your nose, definitely smile-inducing. But I like, to me, the general message I get from this, between the playfulness of the lines, is that poetry isn't going to come out unless you try. You know, you just got to jump in there head first and just give it a whirl. So just an excellent write and very well done.
All right, thank you, Pam. Tom, you gave this the right beat and flow. What did you think?
Well, I it sort of announced itself with the opening line. And then with the second one, just sort of sealed it. That it's done with sort of a wink of the eye and a smile on the backbeat, you know, so that there's a sort of a hip jive overtone to it. But with things like "flows will explode out your nose if you hope so, don't be a no-show, prose is a yo-yo," a certain humor in this. But those last lines, "when I'm flowing, unloading the rhythm, I'm growing the rhyme, I'm glowing, goodbye," is a combination of really, you know, announcing yourself and just the joy of creating and being alive to create, that the goodbye is just sort of a clever ending, because I can just see it being followed by a wink, like, "you want to come along?" It's just a lot of fun to see.
Oh, excellent grand thought, Nick. I had some of the same thing. This had that that beat vibe you would have found in the mid-60s, or
right,
from the 50s into the 60s, where you'd sit in a coffee shop and you'd have somebody rolling out this. And you get that, as you hit on that, the explode out your nose, if you hope so, don't be a no-show, yo-yo. It had that nice little irreverent quality right there in that mix. And it came across also as a kind of a stream of conscious ink in the moment, something that just came to mind and just rolled out of the way it came and put down the paper that way. So I enjoyed this. Nicely done, Derek, and thank you very much. And Pam, we're coming back your way.
All
right. Did you comment?
I did, yes.
Okay.
Yes, and it was the most awesome comment I ever made. Too bad you forgot it.
Boy, that sounds like an out bald-faced lie there.
It probably, yes, I suppose you could call it that, you know. Or you could call it an embellishment. And
shoveling the bull quite heavily.
Yeah.
No, that's like this. You're gilding your lily and you're gilding your lie.
All right. Up next, we have "The Family Ninny" by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. "I am the family ninny, not by choice, but just by chance. I defend my buffoon ways. I take it dense and nitwit stance. Mom loves the kids she bore in her own mama's crazy way. She never talked about my tears, most of which I did not display. An oaf with imbecile tent legacy, my voice is loud and brassy. When I would dream, what I would deem as only humor, others saw as sassy. My bird brain's out to lunch with tomfoolery, but I digress. In short, I love my silly, my moronic way to decompress. I have no sense that's common, unpredictable is my path. It is always in clean fun, or does my dunce cap need a bath? I am the family ninny, often the dumbest loves the most. My sincerity runs deep, so to idiots everywhere I give a toast. It's just one of those family things, hey, don't give it a second thought. Want it or not, let it be known, sometimes funky family's all we got." End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. I heard you giggling on that one, Tom. What'd you think?
Well, I listened to this from a slightly different place than many, perhaps, because a lot of times the kids I were working with were great kids, but where the family style worked perfectly for the first two or three, or the last two or three, somehow there was one person where it didn't work. It wasn't that it was a bad kid. It wasn't that they were bad parents. It's just, you know, the styles, just the genetics were right, but the styles didn't match. I don't know any other way to put it. And she captures so much of this by the fact that she found her own place to survive in her family by playing the fool and by being silly and by not taking the family too seriously, because she was sort of the town clown in a lot of ways. So when we get to that last stanza, it's just one of those family things. Hey, don't give it a second thought. Want it or not, let it be known. Sometimes funky family is all we got. It's just delightful and on the money and right goes right home to where it belongs. This is a great piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Tom. All right, Pam, you got to read it. What about you?
This was fun. I really like the self-deprecating humor in it. But besides the humor, I also really like how it, you know, talks about family. Like, mom loves the kids she bore in her own mom is crazy way. That was great. And I have to, you know, I like the ending where it says, want it or not, let it be known. Sometimes funky family is all we got. Like the whole idea that no matter how crazy we all are together, how many flaws we all have, and, you know, we just, you know, come together as family. And sometimes family means the people you're related to, and sometimes it's the people you just, you connect with. I also, one of my favorite lines is where it says, it is always in clean fun, or does my dunce cap need a bath? You know, like, I like the idea of, you know, you got to figure out, you have to figure out if I'm dirty-minded or not. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Oh, absolutely. Great comment, gang. It's the irreverent little bit of fun that I found this quite humorous. She found a way as being that irreverent quality in maybe, as you put it, the mom is crazy way, and maybe that's a little bit strict, and the kids all have a different quality. So she's the class clown, as she puts it, the buffoon, the bird brain. But that's all a kind of thing to make her stand out as a singularity as opposed to everyone else. So at least she gathers something of a little bit of attention, which makes sense. And she's right on that last line. Funky family is all we got. And how you do it, you'd be a little funky. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right. Up next we have You Got to Have Rain to Get Rainbows by Guilty. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. You Got to Have Rain to Get Rainbows by Guilty. My brother, when the devil's got you down. My sister, when there is no hope to be found. You got to understand it's all part of a plan. You got to have rain to get rainbows. When city living is too expensive and life is the only thing cheap. When the prairie is too expansive and the barn is where you sleep. Remember the dirt floor and hay is where the mightiest man once laid. You can use a little prayer. We can all use a little faith. Nobody has a monopoly or ownership of hard days. It always seems like the other guy takes more than his share of sunny days. The same clouds that obscure your view water the trees that give you shade, cleanse the air you breathe, and the clearing brightens your day. You got to have rain to get rainbows, need snow to make snow cones, a dream to make the hope grow, life to make your day go, and heaven will be the peace we will all know. End quote. All right, Pam, you get to kick that one off.
You did say my name, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, that was just a wonderful read there, Rex. Spot on. Oh, my goodness. I really love this all the way through. Guilty has an amazing writing. My brother, when the devil's got you down. My sister, when there is no hope to be found. You got to understand it's all part of a plan. You got to have rain to get rainbows. I like how this is a message of hope, a message of having faith in difficult times. And I like because that he addresses it not to necessarily to an individual or individuals, but rather everybody everywhere, anybody who needs to hear this message. Nobody has a monopoly or ownership of hard days. I thought that was a wonderful line reminding us, you know, that you're not the only one going through troubled times. And I have to say, I really like you got to have rain to get rainbows, need snow to make snow cones. Of course, I couldn't help but think about, you know, the song about not eating the yellow snow. I would not suggest that for the snow cones. So really just a wonderful heartfelt write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Tom, how about you?
I found this delightful. It was very sharp. And in so many ways, the way you put it together, you come up with these little memes that are so quotable. I mean, I love that one. Nobody, because I used to tell kids when I worked for them, you know, got to remember, nobody's problems ever feel as bad as your own. But I love this. Nobody has a monopoly or ownership of hard days. It always seems like the other guy takes more than his share of sunny ways. It's just such a nice turn on, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side and stuff like that. And there's not only does it show the a quick and sharp wit in all of this, but positive take or a way to see the silver lining when it's cloudy overhead, that by the way it's done and by the beat it maintains and the sharpness of the imagery, it comes off as something fun and something that does get you up, not something where it puts you to sleep because somebody's trying too hard to change the way you should think. This is really good, really well written and very good piece.
Excellent. I agree with you on that, Tom, because what I found, this reminded me of a small church back in the day when you have a preacher making these types of observations to his congregation and instilling that sense of hope and thought that everything will be okay, and instead of fire and brimstone that you get with a lot of people these days. There's more than just the fire and brimstone. It's sort of taking care of your congregation, and this walks in that sort of, remember, dirt, floor, and hay is where the mightiest man once laid. You can use a little prayer. We can all use a little faith. There's that note of hope, and then the hard days, the sunny ways. Hey, you might think your life is bad, but someone always has it a little bit worse. So be thankful for all and what you have in your life on a day-to-day basis. Nicely done there, Guilty. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
All right. Great observation there, Rex. And you're right. It does have a feeling of more of somebody who's a shepherd speaking to his flock rather than, you know, somebody who's condemning people. So very well said. And up next, we have Summertime Kiss by Betty Page. And it goes like this. Carnival ride high, sipping on pink lemonade, cotton candy melts. Painted ponies ride, carousel sweet melodies, enchanting allure. Beneath soft blue skies, rose petals descend in breeze. Love me not. Charismatic guy wins his favorite milk prize, our Ferris wheel kiss. Romantic sunset, looking out high above blue as ocean waves crash. Roller coaster hearts gliding sweetly onto shore, tangled so in love. Dream summertime, kissing sweetly, riding high, never coming down. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Tom, what do you think?
This almost reads like playing around on a carousel. Because the carnival ride high and the cotton candy and the painted ponies, the melodies, but it's the beneath soft blue skies, rose petals descends and bleeds in a breeze. Love me not. Just the way she takes this, the rhythm of it, the mood, the way the, and that last line, serene summertime, kissing sweetly, riding high, never coming down. For me, it just became like listening to somebody rhapsodize the joys of being in love while riding on a carousel or a big Ferris wheel and just being in love. It just gives me that wonderful feeling. It makes me smile.
Thank you, Tom. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Oh, my goodness. I tell you, every time I get done reading one of Betty's poems, I want to ride on a carousel, sip pink lemonade, eat cotton candy, and well, all kinds of other stuff. Because this has just some of the most fun imagery. It's sexy, but it's sexy in like a playful way. I like that she brings in the carousel. I like the metaphorical imagery of rose petals descend in breeze. Love me not. I like the idea of plucking those flower petals, you know, and playing those almost childlike games, but like in a romantic way, and gliding sweetly onto shore, tangled so in love. Just a beautiful and delightful imagery and very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. All right, Summertime Kiss, the carnival. It offers up that that notation to a teenage thrills in the moment, you know, the carousel, the painted ponies. The painted ponies ride had me thinking of that blood, sweat, and tears, spinning wheel. What goes up must come down, spinning wheel, go round and round, ride a painted pony, so on and so forth, had me running that through my mind. And she captures that thought of the carnival, the roller coasters, the thought of the tunnel of love and all that, and the Ferris wheel. So she captured all of that. So it hits on that note of teenage love in the moment, being spent out on a carnival night and having a blast. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right, our last poem for the night will be Me by Where Then. And Tom, will you give that a read for us, please?
Me by Where Then. Me, I would like to take you higher. I'd like to sail some serious height with you. I'd like to go some kind of novo de inglés. You and me, baptized in the church of the eternally hopeful, you and me. Remember those three ponds we walked to, faith, hope, and love? One was dried up and we thought it was all over for you and me. If you want, baby, it's not over. But now it's not a poem anymore. End poem.
Great read, Tom. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you think?
Well, first of all, I got to say it's always great to see new names, new people in the contests and the shows. I really like that he put the title Me as a question mark, like the whole idea of you look at somebody and they're like, are you looking at me? Are you talking to me? Remember those three ponds we walked to, faith, hope, and love. I like that it's not so much a personification, but that he makes getting to faith, hope, and love a journey and something to look back on. It's interesting to me that the ending, where he suddenly just, it feels like a sudden and abrupt ending, which usually doesn't work, but it really does here, for me anyways, because it adds a bit of humor to it, and it really like just kind of put the hand out on your chest and makes you stop. If you want, baby, it's not over, but now it's not a poem anymore. And it's that whole idea of at first I'm expressing myself with metaphors. You know, at first there's kind of a mystery in what I'm saying, and now there's no longer a mystery. It's simply, you know, do you want to be with me or do you not? It's no longer a poem. It's a question.
And so really just a clever write, excellent brevity, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Tom, how about you?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, me as a question mark as a title makes it a setup almost, because he starts, you know, saying, you know, this is what I want. But it's not so much as an ego eye as it is a sharing eye and the dreamy eye. I'd like to sail some serious heights with you. And then it speaks of how, you know, in a sense, they started off with big dreams, you know, the Church of the Eternally Hopeful, you and me. And then in the process of the journey, yeah, things change and life goes on. But, you know, sometimes you got to have a little, I guess the trite term is patience. And things get rough, you got to hold on because things will work out. But like you said, and I agree with what Pam said, the tense when that ending becomes so sharp and pertinent at the same time that you accept it, both because you're preset from finding out what the question mark about the me was, and also because of the fact that, yeah, everything that went before was pure poetry in its own way, but now the hard work begins.
Well said, Tom. Thank you very much. Pam, between you and Pam, I didn't think I can offer up a whole lot, except that thought with, but now it's not a poem anymore. It kind of has that note of everything before that, especially with the Nouveau Eglise, L'Eglise, and the Church Eternally Hopeful. There's that note of losing something in the process where that one of those ponds had dried up, and in losing that something, it's kind of lost the flavor out of the poem and the faith within the voice itself, which kind of strikes me. All right, Pam, we're coming back your way.
All right, Rex, great show tonight. Lots of fun. And back to you.
Okay. All right, 12:30, come see the V-Twins, Victoria, and Verses of LNP. And great show, Pam. Thank you for sitting in with us, Tom. It's great having you. And Kathy, thank you very much for joining us. Had a great time tonight. We did quite a bit, and I think we did just about everybody, I think. Maybe one or two left.
One left.
Great.
That is great.
Yeah.
I thought we did hell. That was a nice chunk of poetry
actually,
tonight.
Two left if you get permission from Penn Allen. So.
Ah, okay, cool. No, that's perfect because we had, I think, 22 all told. So that was a nice evening. Thank you very much, everybody. And I'm back at 12:30 to see Victoria and Verses.
Night all.